Okay, the Buddha's words on loving kindness. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with her boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. So, part of our practice when we're developing meditation, obviously the initial goal of meditation is peace. So we want to choose an object. That's why in the ancient texts of Buddhism, they usually talk about fixing the attention at the tip of the nose or the tip of the upper lip. Because the idea is, you know, the methods that we use to get ourselves going with meditation, you know, it's like the preliminary. Some people like relaxing the body, some people like following the breath, but usually being with the mantra or being with the breath at a fixed point. Ajahn Mahavala gives a bit of an example of some other places that you can place the attention, but the ultimate goal is so that the mind will rest, in one place. And as it rests in one place, then it's not going out to sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, and thought. It's like in its own world. It's in a place of peace and ease. It doesn't matter about external things. And so that's why some of the methods, which is like body scanning or following the flow of the breath, they're useful to begin with to help train our attention. But then by being more fixed in one place, it should be comfortable. So if we're making it so we're stressing ourselves out and crossing our eyes, then maybe, you know, we haven't, that's why it's usually more focused on the sensation. But then the longer we sustain that, then the mind starts dropping into peace. And so that's why usually in the Thai forest tradition, they talk about developing a peaceful mind, which means we make that our foundation. Because when we have a peaceful mind, then we can contemplate without bringing our mind stress. So as the mind has a foundation of peace, then if we think about death or we think about change, or maybe our possessions one day, you know, we come back and our car's on fire or whatever it is. If we've never thought about those things, then one day when it happens, it's going to be like the end of the world, because all of our residual emotions and attachments will come up in that moment and we've never thought about that. And so the process of meditation is first being able to, you know, reflect on our own good qualities. And if we're Buddhist, we're reflecting on the qualities of the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. And this is to get some inspiration in the mind. And then as we get inspiration, then it's easy for the body to become tranquil. And as the body becomes tranquil, then the mind will gain to peace and happiness. And as the mind gains to that happiness, this is the point where samadhi arises. And what is samadhi? Well, it's usually translated as concentration. But it's a concentration that's arising out of a peaceful mind. And so as the mind attains to calm, that's usually what we're aiming for. So as the mind, it's called samatha. So we have samatha and vipassana. And it's a bit confusing because a lot of schools, they talk about their insight meditators and their vipassana meditators. But actually what they're doing most of the time is samatha. They're being with the body, they're being with the simple meditation object. And so that sustained action of being with a simple meditation object that builds calm in the mind. So if it's associated with the contemplation, like maybe we're contemplating death as our main meditation object, because we sustain that contemplation, it will actually build peace. But most people, we use something simple like the breath or contemplation of the four elements. We find them, you know, a meditation object in line with the Buddha's teaching that is interesting to the mind. And as we sustain that contemplation, because the mind isn't proliferating, then the mind will start to drop into peace. And basically the forest Thai traditions, they talk about the Apana Samadhi, which is where we just keep practicing steadily. You know, we use our mind to develop our meditation object when we have spare time. We develop mindfulness through the day. So like when we're washing the dishes, we're just washing the dishes. When we're driving the car, we're just driving the car. And if we can't control our minds, then we need to have an object. So awareness of our body posture, or using a mantra, like a word that we like. In Thailand, they use the word Buddha. So you would just repeat the word Buddha, Buddha, Buddha in the mind or with the breath. And it sounds like a lot of work, but actually, by tying the mind to something simple, what actually occurs is it's like a wild animal, like a calf that previously would run wherever it wants, and now it's been tied to a post. Eventually, one day, the calf's going to give up and just lie down next to the post. And so however difficult meditation is, it's just because our mind hasn't yet seen the benefit of being tied to that post. So it's counterintuitive because, you know, we go out to sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, and thought, and we build all of these stories, and so we're constantly thinking. And so as we start to put down that process in our meditation, and put down that process when we have mindfulness through the day, then our mind starts to attain to peace. And so the process of concentration, whether somebody can do it, you know, like a thousand, you know, tiny actions or one strong action, just depends on the power of the strength of one's mind. So most people, when we begin with, sit down to meditate, and then you're thinking about some conversation you had, you know, or then you're thinking about, you know, well, you know, where am I going to be next week? Oh yeah, that's right, I'm meditating. And then you come back again. But as the time goes on, we start to appreciate the meditation. And then we can sustain a sense of quietness. You know, so that's why in Thailand, rather than going too much on about the factors of jhana, of absorptions, and all these things, most of the Thai Ajahns just talk about developing a peaceful mind. Because that's the one factor that is the common denominator in all meditations that are leading us towards the Appana Samadhi. At the highest level of Appana Samadhi, it's like pure rest, where the mind withdraws inside itself, unentangled with the world. And so that's like the ultimate goal of the peaceful side of it, because then at any time a being wants, they can attain to peace. And then, and obviously that's a very lofty state, usually attained more by people who live in monasteries and quiet places. But it doesn't matter what level of peace we get, because we know even a little bit of peace is better than the mind that we had 5 minutes ago. So whenever our mind says, oh, you know, I can't meditate, I can't do this, I can't do that, you know, this is just delusion. Because it's like a child saying they can't learn and they're in a classroom. All they've got to do is start to try. Even if it takes them 5 years to read, one day they might get there. Most get there in their first year of trying, but some minds are more stubborn than others. They don't want to learn. And so this is like, if we just see ourselves as an apprentice, you know, then it's just about our attitude. We're just apprentice, we're being an apprentice to this work. And if you have that kind of attitude, then we can be gentle and patient. We don't have to be in a hurry. But the more wholesome attitude we have, then we can, over time, we can be earnest in our meditation. We can be keen. And this sense of keenness is interest. Because, you know, why does the child not learn in school? Because they lack interest. You know? So until somehow they get some interest to look at the board and actually try and learn something, they're not going to learn anything. And for whatever reason, but without interest, there will be little progress. So our initial attitude towards practice is to try and have put importance in this. Because to begin with, our mind doesn't leap towards renunciation. The Buddha even said, before he was enlightened, when he was in the palace, even though he had all of this kind of spiritual perfections and was a profound being, even living in the sense pleasures of a palace, his mind didn't leap towards renunciation. And this is a Buddha to be, a very profound being. And so to get the average person's mind to leap towards renunciation is a difficult thing. So when we look at, well, what is an untrained mind, you know? And the Buddha says it's like a fish thrashing in shallow water. So whenever we're having a difficult time in our meditation or our mindfulness, just remind ourselves it's just like a fish thrashing in shallow water. You know, don't expect it to be anything else. This is just the nature of an untrained mind. But if we say, you know, it's my mind and I want peace and I want this like this and that like that, then we're no longer being an apprentice. We're being an apprentice, like a carpenter, apprentice to a carpenter who wants to be an amazing carpenter and he's only at the beginning of his work. So in that sense, we should lower our standards in the sense that, we don't attach to results. We do our best, but we don't make other people our standard. We make ourselves our standard. We learn from the teachers, so we're working in line with the basic teachings of practice, so we don't go astray. It's like keeping the practice simple. But ultimately, who does the work? It's like you go to a restaurant. Well, if you got somebody else to eat the food for you every day, soon you'd be very hungry. And the same is with our meditation. If we don't do our meditation, if we don't look after our minds, who's going to look after it for us? And so that's why in Buddhism, even though people may not believe in past lives or find these things true, in Buddhism we say, we water the seeds of consciousness. So consciousness is an element, like the earth element, but it's a mind element. And so when we go out and we like things, we're watering seeds, there's birth there. When we go out and we dislike things, we're watering seeds, there's birth there. And so these are the places where suffering arises. So if we don't meditate, if we don't develop our minds, then what really, when we die, what have we done to better ourselves from when we came into this world? Because we're different to animals. We don't just have to search for food. We don't just have to search for shelter. Now we have the capacity to think. We have the capacity for higher ethics, for higher generosity, for higher mental capacity. And so if we don't set out a path for ourselves to develop these things, then who's going to do it for us? And so this is the idea where we don't look at the minds of others. Now, even if we see frightful things in other beings, we may see, their bad deeds and their good deeds. We may see atrocities in the world. But if we take on all of these things and react to it, when will we find the time to practice? When will we find the time to develop a peaceful mind? If we don't have a peaceful mind, then everything is like an emotional reaction in our life. It's just a roller coaster. And the Buddha said it's like getting a boulder and throwing it into a mound of clay, like a wet mound of clay. The boulder just enters the clay, completely goes into it. And so this is like our untrained mind. When we have anger, when we have greed, when we have delusion, all of these things arise because we're not protecting our mental states. We're not protecting our actions. We have actions of mind, like the volition of the mind, actions of speech, and actions of the body. And so at the basic level, we're training these actions to be good, so to be right, like noble, rather than bad and wrong. Because when they're bad and wrong, they make us feel bad. And when we feel bad, then, it's like a sense of shame and regret is in our mind. And so the first stage of practice is straightening out our actions. Because when we have generous and thankful and grateful and good actions, then when we reflect on this, it's like in this generation stained with miserliness, we're freely generous. We're open-handed, devoting to giving, devoted to charity and liberality. And so, or with the, I think for the virtue, which is a noble moral conduct of body, speech, and mind, the Buddha says it's like unbroken, flawless, unblemished, unblotched, free, praised by the wise, ungrasped at, leading to samadhi. So samadhi is concentration. So all the foundation work we do in our lives of looking into our actions is bringing us closer to samadhi, because when we decide to do something that is good rather than do something that is bad, what's there? There's samadhi there. It takes concentration to do that. You have to say, no, I'm not going to do that other action anymore. Now I'm going to do this. So actually all the factors work together. As we're more mindful of our actions through our lives, like when I first became a Buddhist, I decided I wouldn't kill insects anymore. So instead of throwing my pillow at the mosquitoes, I had to try and catch them and release them and find other ways. I think I used to, when I opened a cupboard, I would close my eyes for 3 seconds to give the cockroaches a chance to run away, because I figured if there was more, so many there that they couldn't run away in 3 seconds, then I should probably catch them all. So over time, I found ways of dealing with it. And that's a very refined thing, because, you know, they have mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters. They don't want to die. You know, so what is the mind that wants to kill something? It's not wholesome. But to see that for ourselves, you know, that's what's the difficult part. So what we do is we take on certain things that we think might be true, even if they're difficult to do, but it's then when we see that for ourselves, you know, that's where it becomes wisdom. That's where it becomes a tool that we use in our lives. And then beyond the kind of the morality, which is in Buddhism, starts with the 5 precepts, and the mental cultivation, which here we're talking about samadhi, and generosity. Like at temples, there's the lunches, so you can come to temples and you can give food or offer monks and nuns some thongs or you know, something like that. Just, you know, basic things. And then in our own families, helping, you know, when they have a sick family member, you know, we teach the mind, don't be disgusted, you know, if there's blood and this, that, and the other. This is just the nature of these bodies. You know, my body is of the same nature. It will be like that. It's not beyond that. So we use our lives as a training ground. Because if we're always, you know, we don't want to see death, we don't want to see sickness, we don't want to see old age, what's going to happen when that happens to us? So the benefit of our practice is by having samadhi, by seeing into our actions, by developing peace, then we can start to see into these things, that we can see there is the results of action. You know, even if we don't believe in past and future lives, we can see in this very life there is a result of action. If we steal something and think about it, you know, it torments us. Now, if we kill something and think about it, now it can weigh on our minds. And so we don't have to lament about these things, but if we just start to see that, yes, there is cause and effect. Yes, there is, you know, a right and wrong. So if I try to do what is right and good, then there'll be a sense of blamelessness. And that blamelessness is a foundation for peace. And this is why in the Thai forest tradition, like Ajahn Tate, we basically say that really we shouldn't be developing meditation until we have like a strong moral compass, until we develop this sense of virtue. But of course, it's not always as simple as that in people's lives. So, but what we should do, at the very least, is as we practice, we should learn from our actions. You know, see what a, if we're not meditating much, see what a week of meditation is like, what a week of meditation is not like. You know, if you kill an insect, look at what mind is killing. What's that quality of that mind that wants to kill? Or when you want to take some, like a little pin from your, from somebody's house who you don't know because you need a pin. Well, you know, that was their pin. It wasn't your pin. And so it's this sense of scrupulousness is a way of developing mindfulness. It's a way of knowing what the mind is. And this is why the Buddha says not even to tell a lie, even as a joke. Meaning that there's a lower level of action, and there's an even higher level of action where we don't want to even encourage the thought that we may lie. Because if somebody thinks that we may lie, then a part of them doesn't trust us anymore, even if it was just a joke. Because every time we say something, they're going to wonder, well, are they joking? Now they have this thought in the back of their mind. And meaning, you know, the coarser level is, you know, don't go cut the head off a crow when it's making noise when you're meditating, you know. And the more refined level is try to even kill any visible living being, you know, that you can see. Because it's a life form. as consciousness. It's just we can't relate to that because it's in a different realm to us. But, you know, they're still a living being. And so that's more like the Buddhist, from the Buddhist philosophy. But the purpose of all of that means that then when we come to meditate, when we're through the day, that we can sustain a peaceful mind. Because if our thoughts come up about the past or the future, we can just come back to the meditation object. Like none of it becomes sticky anymore. It doesn't stick in the mind. Because the idea is this sense of blamelessness. And the Buddha said, if there was another way without moral conduct, he would have found it. Meaning that, you know, he knew all the paths and all the different results of action. And if there was a way without having this to kind of grow on the path of enlightenment, he would have found it. And there was no other way. But it's not an end in itself. So we don't go beating up our neighbors saying, I'm better than you. I don't kill insects. So we don't use it for a sense of like some kind of attainment to make ourselves better than other people. But we just use it as a way to train ourselves. And so that level of mindfulness is huge. Like the amount of insects I've saved since becoming a Buddhist is immense. You know, I don't go out of my way to save every insect, like if you're walking or something or you brush one off your body. But if I see one insect somewhere, you know, and it's drowning or something as I'm going to have a drink, then, you know, I'll save it. And you know, one of my friends, he started practicing this once and he caught the cockroach and put it outside. And then about a week later, he was out on the balcony on the phone and this cockroach came along. And for some reason, he just had this moment with this cockroach. So I think it was the cockroach that, you know, he saved the light of. And he had this real special moment with this cockroach. You know, so these, even though we can't relate to them, if we just think they are a living being, they don't want to die, you know. Search for food, existence is difficult. Their existence is more difficult than our existence, you know, because they have all these things that will eat it or kill it or every day for them, who knows if they're going to live. And so when I came to Buddhism, I used the non-killing, and trying to, also with speech, like learning not to gossip, learning not to believe when other people say bad things about something else. So having a mind which is always trying to look for the best side of people. Like if somebody's talking about their bad bodily actions, then think about the good speech that they've said. Or if they're saying bad speech, then think about their good bodily actions. If both of them are bad, then just have equanimity, you know. Maybe, you know, later on in this life, they'll be a better person. Maybe next life. But if we go and take the suffering of the world onto our shoulders, you know, that's a difficult path. And so if we just turn back and look into our mind and make our meditation and developing some quietness, like just slowing down. If you're walking in a corridor, just be mindful of your feet walking down the corridor. Slow down a little bit. Now when you get in the car, just settle down. Don't have to be in a hurry. You know, when you're in traffic, doesn't have to be a problem. But wherever we are in life, if we apply this, I like the word quietness, because quietness, you know, has a lovely feeling to it. And so when we start to bring this quietness into our lives, that's the foundation for our meditation. You know, this is the quality that's going to allow our minds to start to stop. And the more that our minds stop, then the greater peace will come into our lives and the less we will be pulled into emotion and drama and all the problems that the mind's happy to drag us into. So we'll do the guided meditation now. Just start getting yourself in a comfortable position. comfortable but upright. And just start by relaxing the body. Just send the mental experience through the body, relaxing from the top of the head, sending the mind through the body, becoming aware of the feelings in the body as they are, welcoming them, relaxing them, calming down. And from the toes back up, ankles, lower legs, the knees relax, thighs, the hips, the waist relax. I've become aware of the belly, abdomen region as it rises and falls with the breath. Just relaxing, coming into the present. Relaxing the diaphragm, the solar plexus, the chest, the heart, the lungs. Become aware of the lungs as they fill up and empty. Filling up with an in-breath, emptying with an out-breath. Putting down our problems, distractions and thoughts, just coming into the present. Relax the lower back and sides, the middle back and sides, the upper back, shoulder blades, the shoulders. Shoulders might droop a little, letting go of tension. The upper arms, elbows, lower arms, wrists, hands, fingertips, and thumbs. The neck and throat, the chin, the jaw, the gums, the teeth, the tongue, the lips. Might notice a soft smile of relaxation, letting go. Starting to be aware of the process of breathing. Relax the nose and cheeks, bags under the eyes, the eyebrows, the eyes themselves. Whole organs of the eyes, totally relaxed, all this agitation, restlessness, worry, anxiety, everything unwinding, letting go. Nowhere to go, just here with our meditation. Letting go of everything else. Relax the temples and the forehead, the scalp, the ears, the whole head, the whole body. We just try and still the body so we can let go before the meditation. Any lingering feelings of the body, we just welcome as they are. Don't need to react to them. Don't need to make stories about them. We just accept them. Let them go. Bring our attention to the mind. Put down the past. all the stories of the past, all the memories, let it go. Put down the future in imaginative proliferation. Let it all go. We come into the present. Now is the time. If we have a meditation object, we can bring it up. I'll give a guided meditation or just background noise for everybody else. First we choose our theme of meditation. I'll give a guided meditation on the breath. We can become aware of the sensations, the breath coming in and out of the tip of the nose, like the upper lip. Or if we have an agitated mind, we might like to use a mantra such as Bud for the in-breath, Do for the out-breath, or follow the flow of the breath. Just make it comfortable to begin with. In-breath is the present moment. The out-breath is the present moment. Once we have our meditation, we just stick with it. Don't change. Have a gentle and patient attitude. We're not in a rush. We're not going to believe the stories of the mind. Just to be with the in-breath. Just to be with the out-breath. Whether the in-breath is short or long, or the out-breath is short or long, just allow it to be comfortable. Sense of ease. Sense of quiet peace. Like we're on a secluded island with no disturbances. If we can be aware of the whole of the in-breath, the whole of the out-breath, its feeling, its texture, it's comfortable and relaxed, its keen attention. awareness to sustain the simple practice. The whole of the in-breath, the whole of the out-breath. In-breath arises, forms and ceases. Same with the out-breath. Try and tranquilize the in-breath, tranquilize the out-breath. It's volition, it's formation. That whole attention, bringing this tranquility, suffusing the in-breath, suffusing the out-breath. Sustaining our chosen meditation. Of inner luminosity and peace, tranquilizing the whole of the in-breath, the whole of the out-breath. Enjoying the in-breath, enjoying the out-breath. diligent apprentice, trying our best to sustain the practice. Moving into a sense of unshakable peace, unshakable stillness, just with the in-breath, just with the out-breath. I'll be silent for the next several minutes. Just do our best to keep with the practice. kind of mind, arising mind, we have after half an hour of meditation. What means do we use? Is this a better mental state than before we began? Is this something that's of benefit? In our own time, when we're ready, and open our eyes, take this peace, whether little or profound, into our lives. Okay, and we could chant. Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers, guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest powers and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nibbana. In every kind of birth, may I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge, unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble Lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled. And a blessing. Svitiyo vivachantu sabaroko vina satu mate pavantvantarayo sukhiti kayukopava apivadana sili sanicha buddha pachayino chataro ramavatanti Ayuvano Sukhang Palang.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Okay, thank you all for coming. Have a lovely evening.